You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, a part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, we have a special episode for you as we're previewing the draft coming up. It's a little early for this going on, but we got our local draft expert, Kellen Olson of Empire of the Suns, Arizona Sports 98.7. Kellen, how are you doing today?
Doing well, man. Doing well. Glad to have the weekend here. It's been a busy couple of weeks for myself.
Oh, for sure. A lot of Sun stuff to take in, for sure. And with the draft coming up, I wanted to get your thoughts on about five or six prospects and what the Suns likely have a top five pick. And it's probably a good time to just preview with the college season beginning. And so let's start off real quick with one guy that's really popped out to me a little bit under the radar, but he's number six on your board, is Jaren Jackson Jr. of Michigan State. You were texting a little earlier today about Jaren Jackson. You said he'd be probably a five with the Phoenix Suns. So what was your overall impressions of Jaren Jackson in high school and also in these last two games he's done with Michigan State?
I have that six. I do think that he is a center. I just don't see how his skill set moves to the four. I just think that he's a guy that just plays the five, and if he's a bit undersized at the five, then he just plays a five. I don't have an impression of him in high school because I don't watch high school. I'll catch Hoop Summit and a couple of other things like the McDonald's All-American game and just those big games. But for him, what stood out from now, from that point in his career until now, has been muscle. He's added a lot of muscle and grown into his frame. And that's something you want to see because he's one of the younger players in this class. He's still 18. And the one thing that stands out to me watching him and just scouting him and trying to figure out what he is in the NBA is that he has a true skill right now, and it's blocking shots. And there's a lot of different ways you see guys go ahead and protect the rim and block shots, but with him, he just really stands out on another level in terms of his instincts and just the way he goes about attacking the ball. It's been only a couple of games so far at Michigan State, but I haven't really seen him get reckless at one point at all. He's really picked his spots really well in terms of blocking shots. And in Phoenix, that's clearly something that they need, is just a versatile defender at center, let alone someone who can actually protect the rim. Because Len has done, I think honestly, Len has not really been that great protecting the rim this year. He was actually much better in his second year in the league than he is right now. So I don't really see Len being that type of rim protector. He's been a really good rebounder this year, actually, but I think Jackson can provide that, and obviously with Chandler and Len, those two guys really can't move that well at all, and Jackson can move the best out of the three. So I think for a fit in Phoenix, I think that's kind of how I see him. I think, Evan, the thing that you might want to touch on here, though, is he has a bit of an offensive game there, and I wrote about this on ArizonaSports.com in my big board. He reminds me a bit of Dragan as a prospect because there are clear signs that there's an offensive game there, but it's just going to have to take time to develop.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask real quick, a comparison. I feel like right now, I feel like Jaren Jackson can come in and step in and do a lot of what Marquese Chriss does, but better. Is that a fair comparison to say? If they drafted Jaren Jackson, do you feel like Chriss would be the odd man out? Because really, Jackson's skill set's kind of almost unicorn-like if he hits his potential.
Yeah, the unicorn phrase gets overused a lot. Yeah. I think that he's on the radar of the unicorn phrase, which is just basically that someone is doing, it's a big man who is doing, has really a ton of perimeter aspects to his game and is just doing something at his size that not a lot of guys can do. I don't see him having that type of game, but in terms of a true two-way impact and can do some defending on the perimeter, I think he is a unicorn in that way. But to answer your question, I think that honestly every question we're going to have when it comes to how does this center fit or how does this power forward fit, I always think that Chris is actually going to be the guy that is the odd man out just because we don't really know what he is right now. To me right now, through watching all of his games in the NBA so far, he is a guy who can hit open threes. He can occasionally, once or twice a game, and those listening who watch the Suns know this, he can attack off the dribble and do a floater every now and then. He can have a nice post move. He had one against LA the other night that looked really nice, but you're only seeing that once or twice a game. The other thing you're getting from him is rebounding, but he hasn't been very good at it, but you hope for him to develop there. And then weak side shot blocking, which he's getting better at again, but it is inconsistent with the fouling and everything. Bender right now is just a good defender. He's a good NBA defender right now. and there's other things for his game to develop into as well. So I think when you're looking at those two guys and how they fit with the rest of the big men like Jackson, for instance, I think Bender is obviously the better fit and the guy you would want to keep out of the two. But that's just my perspective, and they still might believe in Chris more than Bender. But Bender, just by his natural skill set of being a defender who can defend so many positions, and it's more of a supplementary role offensively, he's a much more natural fit than Chris is.
I know, a little off topic here, but related to Dragan Bender, do you feel like he's been the best defender so far on the Suns? I feel like he has been, and it really hasn't been that close so far. Is that a fair comparison to say?
It's tough because I think Tyson Chandler gets a really, really tough judgment sort of deal from Suns Twitter and Suns fans in general because of how slow he moves out there, but it's hard to see the veteran type of defensive plays that he's making and always being in the right place. Now, it might take him a little bit longer to get to those places sometimes, and he's not going to protect the rim much anymore, but I think that goes a bit under. Dragan's still making rookie mistakes out there occasionally and making young player mistakes on offense, but also on defense. They're there every now and then.
True.
I thought against LA actually the game before that, I actually just thought he didn't really play that well. And then in the beginning of the LA game as well, I also thought that he kind of struggled a little bit. I'm not sure if I just referenced the game he scored 15, and of course he didn't play well in that one, but there was a game either two or three games ago. Everything's morphing together for me right now. It's been a very long week.
But
what I mean by that is that I think that he has the chance to be by the end of the season, but I think it's just very, very quick to fire, if you get what I'm saying, in terms of saying
that's true.
He's
yeah.
the best defender on the team right now. He's only 19. It's like, he is only 19, so he's probably going to be the best defender on the team by the time he's 21. But I wouldn't say for factor now, like if Jared Dudley was playing, I would just say Dudley's the best defender on the team because he knows how to rotate consistently.
That's true, yeah.
And he knows how to help everyone out and tell everyone where to be and stuff. And that's something no one else on this team can do besides him and Chandler.
That's a very good point to bring up with Dudley, because I think also he has the best defensive box plus minus so far. But outside of that, who Jaren Jackson played against for just a couple minutes, and he looked pretty good against, was Marvin Bagley, local product. He went to Corona Del Sol High School here in Tempe, now with the Duke Blue Devils. What's been your impression of Marvin Bagley? I'm pretty high on Bagley. I know you're kind of on the lower side of him. So why is he on the lower side for you?
Well, with me, it's one of those things where it depends on how you approach scouting and how you approach evaluating players and stuff. And this has like changed for me. And since I'm so young, I'm only 27. I've only been like watching prospects and seriously hardcore evaluating and writing about them for about 4 or 5 years so far.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm constantly trying to improve and figuring out new ways to go about it. But I really like to see what you're good at right now or what you're supposed to be good at. And that was the thing with me about Marquese Chris, was that I still feel that he's a top 10 overall pick, but I'm just not sure what he is. And that's been my whole theme with him. And with Marvin Bagley, it's a little bit more clear. He's obviously an extremely out of this world athlete. He's one of the best athletes the process has really ever seen in terms of draft prospects we've seen in their first year of college or coming out of high school. There really haven't been many guys like him. He has really great touch around the rim, but I wrote about this. The main thing with him for me is that I don't know what position he plays, because if he plays the four, he's going to have a lot more skill offensively, and he's going to have a lot more ability and know-how defensively. When I watch him on defense, he's just not really in the right spot sometimes. He clearly has the lateral quickness to stick with guys, but he's just reacting late. And then at the five, he's only 6'11" with a 7-foot wingspan, and you need a bigger frame to play center long-term like that. You just need something. You need a little bit more length. If he would have been like 7-foot with a 7'4", 7'5" wingspan, someone like Jaren Jackson, for example, who's 6'11" with a 7'4" wingspan, that's just about where you want to be in terms of the minimum. And with Bagley, I feel like he's too small to be your primary rebounder and your primary rim protector, which is what a center is. So I just don't know where he plays and where you maximize his value the most. But for you being someone higher on him, are you just buying in on the potential of him as a ball handler and a shooter and things like that offensively?
Yeah, honestly, I don't know about the fit overall in Phoenix, because you bring up a good point as what position he plays, but I feel like overall his highest ceiling could be at the three spot, more like a Giannis thing. If he gets that handle, if he gets all that together, I feel like he could be a really good three, maybe. But probably more alongside the four for now, but I'm really bought in on his athleticism. His overall, just his offensive game is a little raw right now, but if he develops past 15 feet or so, if he gets that consistently, I feel like he could be easily the best guy out of this class alongside Luka Doncic. But for a big,
It's one of those things where, like, Tony Roden is a guy I always use for this example, because when Tony Roden was coming out of Washington, he was a guy that had, like, top five ceiling. He wasn't a top five prospect, but in terms of the ceiling and the type of player that he could become, it was very high. But it was so easy to doubt it and see that there were things in the way when it came to that, that you couldn't put him in that range. And with Bagley, he's clearly got either the highest potential in this draft class or the second highest. I think he's top two for sure, without a doubt.
Yeah, with Bagley, as far as that, do you feel like he has to make his biggest strides as far as offensive game or defensive game? Because I know he's pretty raw on both ends. He relies a lot on his athleticism, but do you feel like to make it more on alongside with the pros, do you feel like he needs to be a better defender to round out his game a little better?
I think it's defensively for sure, because if you have those raw elements of your offense, you need to be able to stay on the floor with your defense, especially for him, because you want him out in transition. You want him taking a dribble or two and attacking the rim and setting up his excellent touch around the rim and things like that. And defensively is where I want to see it, and I unfortunately don't think we'll see it at Duke, just because Duke is not known for developing defensive stalwarts, and they're playing a lot of zone, and it doesn't seem like he's going to be in the right situation right now for him to really grow as a defender. But the thing about that is it's tough to evaluate defense, because if you're watching the Sixers tonight against the Warriors or any other night, you're seeing Ben Simmons play good defense. He's a good defender, and like can be a good defender consistently and a great defender consistently. And if you watched him for a year at LSU, he didn't care. He was terrible, and it didn't really matter, I guess, because he's great now. So it's tough to evaluate defense in terms of the complete picture, and that's something you want from Bagley, because you want to evaluate him, like you said, as a four, and then when he becomes really truly the quote-unquote unicorn special is when he's a three. So with him, you're just taking a gamble on him defensively. I think offensively, though, we're seeing the Euro steps every now and then. We're seeing the corner three. We're seeing him grab and go and initiate the transition runs by passing it out. And that's where he will continue to grow. I think he's going to go in the top five for sure. I don't see there's any way for him to drop. I'm at five right now. The Stepien, my guys over there, have him at nine right now, because they're much more concerned about that whole positional question right now. But he's a guy Suns fans should still know about for sure, because he is in that sort of space where they need someone.
Another guy who has maybe a questionable fit in Phoenix but has superstar potential in this draft class is Michael Porter Jr. of Missouri. He's only played 2 minutes so far this season, but what do you think about his possible fit in a Phoenix uniform and also his overall game?
So I keep referencing what I wrote, just because that I wrote what I think in my head. I had a conversation with Scott Bordeaux of AZ Central, who you know, with going to games and everything. We were talking about it, and he just said, like, they need a basketball player. Like, with this pick, they need a basketball player. And Michael Porter is a basketball player. He's not someone like Bagley or even someone like Jackson, who right now I had to say I like Jackson more than Bagley right now. In terms of if I had to pick one to succeed right now, I think it would be Jackson. But in terms of value and everything, I think I still have Bagley ahead. But Porter is a guy that is very skilled. You can see that the skill and the possible potential is there. The red flag for me just jumps out to him right away when I'm watching him, because I don't think his handle is that good, and I don't think he's that good of a passer. So with him, the ceiling and floor is very interesting to me, because he looks like a really good shooter. I love the form on his jump shot. I think his jump shot looks like one of those shots that's just impossible to guard, and looks like he can set that up. But the thing that the guys at the Stepien pointed out with him especially is that what happens is he isn't able to really create his own shot or get into the right spaces, and he winds up settling for a lot of long twos and sometimes contested threes and things like that. But in terms of the fit in Phoenix, back to what Scott said, I mean, if the Suns just don't buy in right now and they're done with one of Bender or Chris, then they can take Porter. But if they're still absolutely locked in on both Bender and Chris being around for the long term, then they can keep them and draft someone else, of course. But if they think Porter is like the first, second, third best prospect and they're picking when the value makes sense, then I don't think they should turn him down if they think he's the guy.
Now with Porter, with his perimeter game, I feel like with we're seeing it now with Booker. He's getting double teamed and trapped a lot almost every possession, and they're trying to have Josh Jackson or TJ Warren beating from the outside, which they're pretty much succeeding at so far when Booker's not hot from the field. And I want to get your thoughts on that. Would Porter add perimeter game to this offense, even though it'd be a kind of a questionable fit alongside Jackson and Warren? But I feel like they could also keep Chris and Bender just for rotational pieces, but I feel like with the perimeter game, he could add a lot, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I feel like the fit with Jackson and Warren is that you're just looking at a guy who's like a 3-4, and it doesn't really matter that Porter's more of a 4 than a 3. It's the fact that he's a 3-4. That's why there are fit concerns there. But he's just a very skilled offensive player and adds shooting as well, and shooting is the thing that this team needs now more than anything. Kevin Zimmerman wrote a piece, I want to say during Summer League of last year, like 2016, where it was pretty much like, look, if Dragan Bender and Marquese Chriss develop and Josh Jackson develop and whoever it was, they still need shooting. These guys are going to have to hit their open threes because they drafted three guys who you're just hoping that they're going to be average three-point shooters. And the problem there is if two of those guys can't shoot, we're seeing it a lot with TJ Warren right now, who, I mean, he shot 40% in those 40 games he played in his second year, so I thought maybe there was a chance for his three-point shot to still be something. But right now it looks like nothing. And teams are going to start to really back off of him. That's the worry with this offense, and I think that's where you can look at Porter and say that he'll fit. He's the best shooter in terms of the top 10 prospects in the draft right now, for sure.
Now, moving on real quick to the bigs, and I know we're both really big fans of the top two centers in this class, so let's touch on the one local prospect here, DeAndre Ayton. When I saw the first game, the first highlight I saw was him getting that steal in transition and that big high-flying dunk going down to the rim that fast, and my jaw almost dropped because of that. I was like a guy that big shouldn't be able to move like that. And it looks like DeAndre Ayton's also gained a lot of muscle over the summer at Arizona, being in the weightlifting program. So you know Arizona a lot. You went to Arizona. So what's your overall thoughts of DeAndre Ayton?
Yeah, he's the guy to me where you talk about ceilings and everything, and we just talked about Bagley being number two. I honestly believe that the highest ceiling is DeAndre Ayton, and that might surprise someone to hear me say that Doncic doesn't have one of the top two ceilings in the draft. But if Ayton is the absolute apex of what he's going to be an absolute monster and a menace defensively, because like you said, the way that he moves at his size, it's this next, physically, first of all, with the strength, like you said, he looks like the next version of like David Robinson, Joel Embiid, Shaquille O'Neal, and Dwight Howard in terms of those physical freaks from the jump. And he reminds me of one of those guys. And then you look at him move his feet, and for a man of his size and muscle, it just doesn't make sense how quick he is. So with that, you look at him defensively and look at him move his feet, and the potential is there defensively to protect the rim and to switch on to guys and slide. Offensively, the thing that's so appealing is his jump shot. It's a line drive right now with a very quick release, but the form is kind of low, but it's still a very quick release, and it goes in right now. So you look at him and you're like, man, can he be a stretch five that can protect the rim, do everything defensively, and then also not only have the jump shot down, but have the skill to take it off the dribble, and more importantly, the quickness. He is very, very quick for his size. The one thing I'm watching for him with the next couple of games going and the rest of the season is going to be how he uses his physicality, because right now it looks like he doesn't know how to go about using his strength. He's scared to maybe perhaps have guys draw charges on him or something, but he had one move in their third game where he just did a spin move on a guy who was like 6'6 or 6'7, held his elbows out and just elbowed the dude right in the chest pretty much when he spun out. And that's the type of power you want to see from him to use because of how strong he is. But I really like him, and I think that as long as he can prove offensively that there's more to his game than just his jumper, which is what I want to see going forward, I think he's the guy that's going to go. He has to go in the top five, and I think he might be like even a lock for the top three with the way that he's looking so far.
I found it interesting. I saw an article on SB Nation's Arizona site, Arizona Desert Swarm. They had a report that that DeAndre Ayton had the green light to shoot as many threes as he wanted from Sean Miller. So I think we're going to be seeing a lot of his jump shot development over the next couple months. But alongside with Ayton, I feel like his overall fit with Phoenix would be, like you said, probably one of the best overall for the Suns because his overall offensive game. And if he tries on defense, he could be one of those two-way monsters. And he could really open up the floor for Booker, couldn't he?
Yeah, that's what I wrote about and referenced in there, is that you offensively, you run a two-man game with him and Booker. I don't know how you stop that. I just don't really understand how you do. And then the hope is with Jackson, Bender, Chris, whoever else is playing, Warren, those are the guys you have off the ball when they shut down both Aiden and Booker in those situations. But he is the most natural fit to me just because the Suns desperately need an interior scoring option right now. They have an opening at the five on the roster right now, and Aiden would, most importantly, again, be able to provide spacing with shooting. And I'm not even talking about three-pointers. I'm just talking about like a 20-footer or something. That's something that Tyson Chandler doesn't have in his game. That's something that Alex Len tried to have in his game and doesn't, rightfully so. But with Aiden, I think that he can at least do that. And then, again, if he's like taking the ball off the dribble, if he's doing these things defensively, then it's a whole nother dimension you enter with him playing with either Chris or Bender or really whoever it is.
Another guy who has some untapped, almost unicorn potential, like a lot of these guys in the top five of this 2018 draft class, is Mo Bamba. And I think today he had a line of about 6 points, six rebounds, and four blocks in about like 8 minutes time. I think he played like 19 total minutes. But I think in his first session out there on the court, he had put up that those amount of numbers against Lipscomb. So what's your overall thoughts on Mo Bamba? I'm really high on Bamba. I feel like he could be a defensive anchor along the lines of Rudy Gobert, even better, and even have a jump shot. So I think that could be a perennial all-star type of prospect. So are you as high on Bamba as I am?
Yeah, Rudy Gobert and Al Horford are the two names you're going to hear all the time because Mo Bamba or Rudy Gobert is such an easy comparison for Mo Bamba, and I'm not saying like you were wrong in saying that or anything. It's easy because it's true. Like it's there. The freakish, absolute freakish wingspan. Bamba's, I believe, is 7'9", and Al Horford, by the way, was for Wendell Carter, who's not someone we're talking about, but I think we should talk about later on in the year. He's a really nice big man out of Duke right now. But Bamba, like you said, defensive anchor, but he's quick. It's we keep saying this. Like, we haven't even talked about Robert Williams either at Texas A&M. He's also quick, but Bamba's quick, Bagley's quick, Aiden's quick. These are all quick bigs, and Bamba has the ability to not only be that monster rim protector with that monstrous wingspan, but he can also switch and slide, which is something we've been talking about a lot lately, but that's because it's pretty freaking important in the NBA today in order for you to really make it far and win titles. And Bamba, to me, is that guy defensively who could be the identity of this team. Offensively, of course, everyone is talking about the fact that he can shoot threes, but to me, I just want to be able to see him be the right rim runner, the right dump-off guy, and have a capable post move or two, and then you move into him shooting corner threes, I think. But to me, I think the fit is there. Defensively, I worry about his effort. It's just for what he does on the court. It's like your main thing is to be this defensive anchor. You need to be locked in all the time, and he's just not locked in all the time. That might change, of course, over the year at Texas, but he's the guy that I think has the best chance out of a top three, top five guy to drop out of the top five just because if he shows inconsistent effort at Texas, I don't see how you can bet on him to be that defensive player. But like we just talked about, the whole Ben Simmons thing, that could turn around. So really, who knows? I don't know at all.
Yeah, with Mo Bamba, I was looking up his wingspan. It's 7'9" compared to, I think he's like 7'7", 7'1". So it's a really...
Yeah, 7 foot, yeah.
Yeah, really freakish. And I think Rudy Gobert is like 7 or 8 inches wingspan higher, and he's 9, so that would break the all-time record in the NBA. So he's a really freakish prospect to watch out for. But our number one guy on both our boards is Luka Doncic. I feel like it's a lot of on NBA executives' boards, too, is... He's really almost the Slovenian LeBron out there, almost, right? Because he's been doing a lot of things that people at the age of 18 shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. People are asking me for comparisons about him, and I just don't know how to not say like LeBron and Magic and stuff because that's just what I'm seeing from him. I really like how complete his game is. He's a smart defender. He's a good on-ball defender. He needs to get better there, but I like his game there. He's a good rebounder for his size. He's about 6'8", 6'9". He can shoot, and he can not only shoot just in terms of like catch and shoot and like being just a catch and shoot guy. Like he can shoot off the dribble, run off screens, things like that. But of course, like the whole LeBron angle of him is he is absolutely magnificent playing in the pick and roll. He is amazing at it and can just absolutely break down teams. And he was playing for Slovenia in Eurobasket and was competing against guys in the NBA, like long-term veterans. At the age of 18, he was one of the best players in the tournament. And alongside Goran Dragic, the former son, he won the tournament. And he's one of the best players in Europe right now, being 18. It's just something unheard of. And to me, he's been the number one guy. You asked me when we read draft workouts, before this draft. You asked me, like, what do you think about next year? And I was like, Doncic all the way. There's no question. It's just he's the guy. You watch him and just go watch his games. And if you can, try to avoid the highlights and just watch the full game, because that's when you really realize how much he pops off the screen consistently, because you can see the highlight flashy plays and everything else. But he, to me, is just so well balanced on top of being so amazing in certain aspects of the game. His athleticism is a concern. I'm not 100% sure if he is going to be consistently attacking guys off the dribble and creating space because of that. That's where the LeBron, Magic, those types of comparisons end, because he's going to have to get faster and he's going to have to get stronger and figure out which position he's going to guard as well. But in Phoenix, just you take Luka Doncic. I don't care who you have on your team. Like, I guess Philly already has Ben Simmons, so they wouldn't want Luka Doncic too. They just let Ben Simmons do his thing, and that's the only really, really reasonable team I can think that maybe wouldn't take him, number one, for fit reasons. But he fits everywhere. He's just one of those guys you take, and he makes your team better.
Yeah, with Luka Doncic, I feel like the fit with him and Josh Jackson, Devin Booker, that has the potential, about 5 or 6 years down the line, to be one of the best overall wing trios in the NBA as far as 1 through 3 starting lineups as well. So if they have the chance to get the number one spot, I feel like that's the guy that they take. And really, before we go into, I want to touch on real quick about Devin Booker, but before we do that, is Luka Doncic, I know you haven't been scouting prospects for more about 5 years or so, you said, but compared to Luka Doncic with Ben Simmons and those other top picks, what stands out to Doncic compared to those guys that they didn't have?
Yeah, I've been a huge NBA draft fan my entire life. I just haven't been like absolutely like in depth watching them like I have been the past couple of years. So I know what the talk was about guys going through. But in terms of like the number one overall prospect in the past like 15 years or so, I think he ranks in terms of like the top 5, 6, 7 guys. I think that's certainly there's obviously like LeBron, there's obviously the Durant Odin year, and there's a couple of other ones that stand out, John Wall, Blake Griffin, those types of guys, but Kyrie, another one, Kat, another one. Like there's been a lot of really good number one overall prospects, but the point is he's in that group, and that's what makes him so special. And to me, we've been waiting for the Suns to finally win the draft lottery and have the number one overall pick. If all of the losing and the coin flips and all that garbage was worth it to get Doncic, then it was worth it, because he's that type of player that can take whatever space this team is in right now and really transcend them and push them forward into where they need to be, honestly.
Now, let's say, playing hypothetical here, that they get the number one overall pick and they do get Luka Doncic. Do you feel like McDonough then at this point would have those guys like Bamba or Ayton? Would he have the possibility, or would he be intrigued by replacing one of Chris or Bender by trading one of those guys alongside other picks to getting up and doing one of those things he did a couple years ago with Bender and Chris getting 2 top 5, 2 top 10 picks?
I think that's the fascination a lot. It's impossible to go through a series of knowing, because I wrote a lot of Brightside profiles back in the day, just like knowing people would be like, I'd love to see us trade up with this pick and this pick to get to this spot. It's a fascination a lot to like have to pick two guys in the top six or whatever it is. I don't think you can rule anything out with McDonough, because the one thing he's proven over his tenure, and I've said this a bunch, is that he's going to make moves. He's going to fail, he's going to succeed, but he's going to make moves. So if he is sitting there and he has Doncic at 1, and he has the Miami pick that's at 12 or wherever it is, and he has all these extra first round picks, and he says, screw it, we're going to move Marquise Chris, we're going to move the Miami pick, we're going to move our future first next year, we're going to pick 3rd, we're going to take DeAndre Ayton, take whoever, and this is going to be the group. But I'm going to repeat this time after time, the Suns don't need more young players. They should really try and limit that going forward. They need some more veterans around this team. So I think you could actually flip it into the other way, where they say, screw it, we're going to move on from Marquise Chris or Dragan Bender right now and not look to directly replace them with a young guy, but replace them with a veteran, and look for someone to be the 3rd wheel in the Doncic Booker space right now. I know a lot of people are hoping that's Josh Jackson, but I think there needs to be someone there with veteran experience in some time if that's the case. And I think that's the more likely scenario to me than like trading up into the top 4, top 3, whatever it is.
With you saying that, I know this is looking ahead and it's almost unpredictable looking ahead with how players are nowadays, but looking at possibly like DeMarcus Cousins or Anthony Davis, is there a guy out there that makes a lot of sense that McDonough is going to push that all-in button for and have that one guy grow alongside Booker and Jackson and whoever the pick is or whatever happens and having those three or four guys grow together? Is there a guy out there that intrigues you like that?
No, because it would be an absolute shock if a prime time free agent of that level picked Phoenix in terms of free agency. So it's going to have to come through a trade, in my opinion. And that's not going to be really known until we know that a player is available or we know they demanded a trade. The three names I floated when I wrote about this was those two guys, Boogie and Davis, and then Andre Drummond, just because they were the three bigs that would seemingly be the most likely to be available. One of those three, Andre Drummond, of course, has taken his game to another level in Detroit, and they're really playing well. Of course, the Boogie and Brow thing is going to be very interesting to monitor. I do think Boogie makes the most sense in terms of a guy that McDonough is going to look at and say, I don't care about the question marks about his character or whatever. Can you win with him? I need a guy of this level, and I'm going to give him max money and pay him 5 years, whatever, 4 years, whatever, and just really try and take it over the top with him. So I think if there's one to pick right now at this point, it's Boogie, but I wouldn't place any money on it by any means.
Yeah, I'd probably go along the lines of Boogie or Anthony Davis as well, but I think it's going to be really interesting to see how that Bledsoe situation plays out because obviously DeMarcus Cousins is good friends with Eric Bledsoe, so I wonder how he'll put his voice in his ear on that if that comes to fruition at all. But I wanted to put out the perspective of Devin Booker's season so far before I let you go, and I want to get your thoughts on it. I wrote a piece on it a couple days ago with how historic of a start he's had so far. I think in his last 13 or so games, he's been 25, 5 and 5. And over almost 60 true shooting percentage and 55 effective field goal percentage. So, did you expect this type of? I mean, we all expected a jump from Devin Booker, but did you expect this type of jump?
That's a good question. I think somewhere along these lines, I wrote the thing in the preseason where I basically said like he's going to be great. Greatness is coming for him. I just didn't know when and how soon. I thought that this season we were going to. The point of that was writing that this season he's going to show parts of his game. People are going to be like, "Whoa, I didn't know that!" Like, I didn't know he could make the cross court pass to the weak corner. I didn't know that he could shoot 50% and score 30 points like consecutively and do things like that. I didn't expect, I can't say that I expected this level. But at the same time, I think that the interesting thing that you brought up, and I tweeted this out when you brought up the thing, is like, how do we properly contextualize what he's doing right now? Because I think that what he's doing right now is very special, but at the same time, what he's doing right now is proving that he's one of the best young players in the league right now. And I think that's enough for now. I think we can rest easy in terms of all-star games right now, especially with the way the Western Conference is. I think his numbers are ridiculous, but if you look at some of the other numbers people are putting up, like I was looking up, like, I mean, what's happening in Houston right now with the numbers Harden and Gordon are putting up, and like CJ McCollum right now is shooting like over 50% from three or something. So I'm not really going to talk about all-star games or anything like that, or if he's one of the best two guards in the league right now. I think the more important thing is that he looks like he is ready to become that multi all-star potential all-NBA type shooting guard at one point in his career and be really that next level superstar that the franchise needs. I think that's the most important thing to take away from the numbers, and I think that is the aforementioned jump that you're talking about. And the third year is when those guys traditionally do make that little leap a little bit. So, yeah, I can't say I fully expected it to be this good this quick, but at the same time, I think watching him through 2 years, you could sense that something special was coming, and we're seeing it right now. And it's going to be exciting to see how it develops. Hopefully, Phoenix and Ryan McDonough especially don't screw it up, because they've got him and they've got to keep him and give him the right pieces around him to win.
Yeah, right now I looked it up today. I think Devin Booker is third in event offense box plus minus at 3.8 behind Bradley Beal and James Harden. So he's in some pretty elite company already as far as his offensive impact goes. But with Booker overall, I wanted to see with him his development at the point guard spot, and we're seeing it so far. So I haven't gotten your thoughts on a podcast yet, but what do you think about seeing Booker at the point guard spot?
Like playing it full time?
Yeah, so far, and also just seeing in spurts and maybe starting alongside Troy Daniels or something alongside that.
I think you can do it when the situation permits it. I think you can do it when you need to, but the trouble with that is you need to value him as the asset he is at 21 years old and try not to wear him down.
That's true.
And that's something that Triano talked about, and I think you were the one who tweeted out that quote with Triano saying about his durability, and I think that's the main concern with him playing point guard is that you don't want to wear him down. But I think it's something like, for example, if you draft Luka Doncic, who we just talked about for a bit, if you take him, I think your perimeter three is just Jackson, him, and Booker, and then who's the point guard? I guess sometimes it's Doncic, sometimes it's Booker. Hopefully Jackson can eventually be the guy that can handle some situations like that as well. And that's the kind of situation I can see him in. I think he can definitely play point guard at times, but I don't think he's a quote-unquote point guard, if that makes sense.
No, totally, yeah, because he's putting up really good numbers at the two spots, so why put him out of position? But I wanted to ask before I let you go about overall his perception right now nationally. Do you feel like if Booker keeps these stats up that he's going to start to catch on, or is it more about wins and losses with the Suns, and that attention really won't come until that happens? Because we see Jokic all the time, Kristaps for good reason so far this season, but those guys 23 and under, I don't see Booker brought up as much as those guys. But is it really just because the Suns are just this, how they are right now?
Yeah, it's just because the team sucks. They really freaking suck. They're bad. They've been bad for a very long time. So people are not watching this team that much, and people aren't caring about this team that much. And guess what? We don't really care about the Brooklyn Nets that much right now. Like, it's one of those things where you have to have perspective on it and realize that these people giving these 10, 15-second answers or even just like one or two tweets on Devin Booker haven't seen the whole story, nor are they intending what they're saying to be the whole story. But it's going to be fascinating, like it has been since it was clear that he was going to be good, to see how he is criticized, because he was being extremely criticized by some people who were trying to make an even balanced argument, but they trapped themselves a couple of times by talking about efficiency and talking about these other things. And that's what I wrote about in that thing, is like, look, he was 20. He was asked to be the primary offensive option on a team and really run the team when he was 20. And he comes into the year when he's 21. He's got Bledsoe with him. Well, Bledsoe's freaking gone right now, but he's still doing it without Bledsoe anyway. But the thing about that is now they're going to start talking about, can he win and can he do this? And it's like, dude, Mike James and Tyler Ulis are his point guards right now. Look at who he's got at center. Tell me who the third best player is on this team, and then we can talk about how much. Oh, that's the difficult thing about that, is that there's going to be escalations of this is he really good thing. I don't think we're past that yet. It's winning. I think he'll get his dues. I think he's already starting to get his dues from people. It just might take a little bit longer. I think in December and January is when we'll really start to see all the national columns on Devin Booker that we've seen so far, but to the effect of him effectively making the jump and seeing these rash claims that you and myself and other people have been making for the past couple of months now, and him starting to get the credit he deserves, which is that he is going to be, he is next, like Kevin Durant said, he's next, yeah.
Yeah, I think we all agree now from the first 15 or so games we've seen out of Devin Booker that he has taken the jump, that he's going to be an elite guy in this league. He will be a superstar down the line. It's just all about when. And right now, he seems on the fast track of being there as fast as we all expected. So it's going to be real interesting to watch the Suns this season and how Booker and the rest of the guys move forward. But I appreciate you coming on today, Kellen, to talk all these draft prospects and Devin Booker, and hope to have you on again sometime this season.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Thanks a lot.